Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
As of right now, vaccine eligibility is opening up to anyone over the age of 16 in New York State. Joining us live is Dr. Stephen Turkovich, Vice President and Chief Medical Officer for Oshai Children's Hospital. Dr. Turkovich, we're glad you could join us this morning. How big a deal is today?
This is a significant milestone, I think, for the United States. You know, a year ago, we weren't really sure what we were facing in terms of the longevity of the pandemic, nor where it was going to go. And in a little over a year, the fact that we're able to have everybody eligible over 16 to receive a vaccine is a significant milestone.
It is expanding, and more people will be eligible as of today. Hopefully more people able to actually get those vaccination appointments. It becomes a little tougher, though, doesn't it, as we get kind of down, you know, once you get below 18, and then we're talking about, you know, we heard just a week ago Pfizer's results between the ages of 12 and 15, to have people who are not at risk for severe outcomes from COVID, to convince them to get the vaccine. And what kind of cost-benefit analysis goes into the decision to vaccinate somebody who, when you know, look at it, generally doesn't have a severe outcome from COVID?
Well, there's a couple of things you want to consider. The first one is our goal is to get to herd immunity, which is 70 to 80% of the population being immunized, which would require us to vaccinate children as well, including adolescents. So that's the first thing. The second thing is you're correct that children are not being admitted in high numbers or, you know, in the ICU in high numbers with COVID. So they don't really have an acute challenging course. However, we don't know what the long-term consequences are of COVID. We know about long haulers and adults, and we're not sure if that could actually happen in children. Other viruses tend to reactivate at times. So the most common one to think about is chickenpox reactivating as zoster or shingles later in life. So there could be a potential where the COVID could come back in some way. So I think the unknown about the potential long hauler syndrome should be a big motivator for people that are not at risk for acute significant illness.
Does that situation change as you go down in the age group a little bit? You know, because if we're still kind of working on the emergency use authorization of the vaccines in those lower age groups, and there might need to be a tweaking of the Pfizer vaccine or the Johnson & Johnson to be able to administer to somebody who's younger. By the time that happens, if, you know, the vaccine is readily available to everybody else and everybody who wants it gets their shot, I mean, would there be less of a rush to vaccinate the younger population potentially?
Well, yes and no. I think the other thing to think about is that the best vaccines out there have about a 95% efficacy. And it potentially has dropped a little bit because of the variant. So, you know, 95 out of every 100 people that get a vaccine are going to be immune, but that means 5 out of those 100 will not. And when you start extrapolating that across the population, that still leaves a pretty significant number of people that potentially could get COVID and have the side effects despite being vaccinated. So the best thing to do is try to get every single person that's eligible to be vaccinated, so you decrease that risk of anybody coming into contact with the virus.
Dr. Turkovich, for parents with children 16 and older, it seems like there's two schools of thought. They're either, you know, can't wait to get their kids scheduled for the vaccine, or they say, you know what, I want to wait. This hasn't been studied long enough. What would you tell the latter parent?
Well, the good news is that this vaccine, although it was developed quickly, was studied very robustly. And we know that in the decades of vaccine studies that we've done, usually when you're going to see side effects within the first 2 months of giving the vaccine. And so we've studied that in children 16 and older with the Pfizer vaccine, and we haven't seen any significant side effects. I can say that with all the vaccines that have been developed thus far up until now, we have not seen any vaccine provide significant long-term side effects that showed up several years after the vaccination. The other thing is that technology has been used in other areas, including cancer therapy and in other vaccines like Ebola. So the technology has actually been around for a longer time than the COVID vaccine has, and that has not shown to be having any long-term side effects. So it is safe. And I would certainly recommend anybody over 16 who's eligible to get it.
When you said that about the technology, because that is one of the concerns that I would say most parents have, is the long term, you know, the years down the line, the potential for any sort of side effects. What research has been done to ensure people that over the course of many years, they would not have any adverse side effects?
Well, I think it's important to understand how it actually works. So the Pfizer vaccine and the Moderna are mRNA vaccines, and it's a little mRNA, which is a set of instructions that are encased in a fat globule that are encased in that so it can be absorbed into your cells. It goes into your cells, and it tells your cells how to make the spike protein, which is not going to make you sick, but it's going to allow the body to develop an immune response. The mRNA then is very quickly destroyed by the cell because it's not very stable. So the RNA actually does not last very long in your body. It's the antibodies that your body's producing against that spike protein that we hope will last forever and ever and ever. It never enters the nucleus of the cell, so it never interacts with your DNA. So there's no chance that the mRNA could last for years and years and years in your body or affect your DNA.
You know, because of that, is the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine better than the J&J vaccine for a child?
Well, right now, the only vaccine that's been studied in 16 and 17-year-olds is the Pfizer. Moderna and Johnson & Johnson are starting trials. I think Moderna is actually starting trials down to 6 months of age. So we will have some more data within the next, I would say, 5 to 6 months or so for both of those. But as of now, the speculation is that Moderna will likely be safe just as Pfizer is for in the adolescents, since the technology is very, very similar.
We ask you this just about every time we talk with you. What has been the picture recently with COVID cases at Oshii Children's Hospital?
Well, the picture has not changed significantly. You know, we did see a slight uptick in January in the number of kids admitted. I think we had about 20 in January. In February, we dropped down to about 16. And in March, I think we had about 8 children admitted of all ages, from babies all through adolescents. So, again, we have not seen a significant number of kids being admitted with COVID, which is great news, and very, very small numbers of children in the ICU. All of them have recovered and returned home. So fortunately, this is, as we talked about before, not really significantly affected children in that way.
And going back to these adolescents that are eligible now, what happens if a 16 or 17-year-old wants the vaccine, but their parent doesn't?
Yeah, that's a very good question. You know, the way that I try to approach it is in an open and honest way through dialogue and having that conversation with both the teenager and the parents to help them both understand each other's perspectives, fears, and concerns, and be able to answer their questions using the evidence that we know. And generally, when you have that open and honest discussion, you can come to some consensus.
Wanting to switch the focus here just a little bit before we let you go, this idea of getting kids back in school, we're still waiting on guidance from the state to go to that, from that 6-foot rule to a 3-foot rule, and no one kind of really knows when that is going to come. What have you seen over the last year kind of surface in hospitals as a result, or as potentially a result, of kids being out of school for so long? Because we're hearing so many reports of whether it's a mental health call or something like that. Have we seen that here in Buffalo, the results of kids being isolated for over a year?
You know, unfortunately, we're no different here in Buffalo, where we have seen children presenting to the emergency department and being admitted for things like intentional ingestions, suicide attempts, an increased number of kids being diagnosed with eating disorders. So we're seeing the full gamut of mental health conditions in children as a result of the isolation and the stress of the pandemic. We've also seen an increase in some severe child abuse combined with a decrease in the number of reports of child abuse. So the biggest concern there is that a lot of cases are going unrecognized because kids are being isolated and not in schools and other areas where they could be identified as a potential abuse victims. So, you know, it's something that's very, very concerning to us. In my mind, it is a mental health crisis that does warrant a significant amount of resources, but also attention, and balancing that with the safety of returning to school, given the fact that we know that school is the best place for kids' physical, emotional, and mental health development.
But you're in favor, then, of getting more kids back into schools?
Absolutely. You know, I think that we've been proven that we can do it safely with all of the safety measures that have been put in place. Sometimes the challenge is taking that recipe of safety measures and implementing them. But I know many schools that have developed some creative solutions that can do that. So, you know, we're certainly here to help any schools that need help in terms of how to implement things and understand the safety measures. But I'm fully confident that kids can go back safely if we follow these. My children go to school 5 days a week in person.
Are your kids getting the vaccine?
They're not 16 yet, but yeah, as soon as they are, they're 8 and 10. So as soon as it does drop down to that eligibility level and obviously approved, my children will be getting it.
All right. Hey, Dr. Turkovich, thanks so much. He is the Vice President and Chief Medical Officer at Oshii Children's Hospital.